Om Shanti. Everyone was here for Bapdada's Murli of October 19th. And so we all know that Baba has told us a very, very extraordinary secret. And that is, when all the Brahmins are in tune with each other, we can go home. Is that right? So first of all, we have to see if we are ready to go home. Are you ready? Is it bad enough? Do you want to wait? Yes? Well, I think Baba thinks that 1 year from now, you know, one of these fine days, it'll be the last Diwali. So maybe we can really harmonize with each other. And so there are 1 million strings in this amazing piano, and each one has to be in tune with all the others. And that's what Baba wants from us. So if you think about it, all the knowledge that Baba has given us, the soul, supreme soul, karma, drama, the family tree, the ladder, the powers, the virtues, all of it is for a single purpose, and that is for all of us to be in perfect harmony with each other. Is that right? Yes? So that's what we're going to do. Someone's not getting translation, so we'll see about that. I think that especially the powers are extremely helpful in harmonizing with each other. So when we want to have perfect harmony, we have to have a very good skill in the use of the powers. And we also have to understand that every single soul has four sections. Mind, intellect, good sanskaras, bad sanskaras. Four sections. Is that right? Is there anybody who has only good sanskaras, no bad sanskaras? Anybody who has only bad sanskaras, no good sanskaras? So we have mind, intellect, good sanskaras, which is the first half of the cycle, bad sanskaras, which is the second half of the cycle, right? Is there any soul who's not going to take 84 births? Even if you only have one birth, you'll still have mind, intellect, good sanskaras and bad sanskaras. So this is something we need to understand. Then the other thing is that each and every soul has a predetermined part. Is that right? Is anybody creating their own part that's not predestined in drama? We all have a part that's destined in drama. And all the other people have a part that's destined in drama. And so there are implications of all these things. And the implications tell us how we can live in perfect harmony with each other. And if you look at your Brahmin life, you will find there are various other characters in the drama. And some of them you will say, these I can synchronize myself with these ones very well. I can harmonize with this one very fine. And then there's other ones you say, no chance. No possibility. I've tried every which way, and I'm absolutely sure it's not possible to harmonize with these bunch of people. And Baba says, no. These ones you will be able to harmonize with. And I will tell you, I will tell you exactly how. And so he does. Is that right? So think for a moment of all the people that you don't get along with. There must be one or two. Right? And the reason you don't get along with them is because they do things that annoy you. Or they're too big, too small, too fat, too thin, too beautiful, too successful, too fast, too slow, too something. Right? And that's why you don't harmonize with them. Now, think about the powers for a moment. We have eight powers, because there is other powers as well, but particularly the eight powers are especially donated to us, contributed to us by our teacher, Shri Baba, for the purpose of being able to harmonize with anyone under any circumstances for any amount of time. And so tolerance, you see. If you have tolerance, it doesn't matter how much someone annoys you, it's all right. Is that right? Accommodation. It doesn't matter how bad somebody's performance is in the drama, you can accommodate it. Is that right? If you have the, if you don't have the power, of course, there's no chance. But what's missing is the power. Power of cooperation. You can harmonize with anyone if you have the power of cooperation. You know. Sleeping with somebody who snores really loudly the whole night. Right? That's very good power. Even if you're not deaf. Yeah, really, you know. Someone wants the fan on. Someone wants it off. Window open, window closed. Someone wants to drive fast. Someone wants to drive slow. You know, it's my way or the highway, you know. Each and every one knows exactly what the gyan is, and the other ones don't, right? Like this. So, power of discrimination, discernment, power of judgment. We have to be able to recognize each other. I think Baba had said that in a Murali, that you must be able to recognize each other. You must be able to understand each other. You must be able to understand yourself. You see. If someone lies to you and you don't know, whose fault is it? Your fault. Lack of power of discrimination. You didn't realize someone's lying to you. If you know someone's lying to you, it doesn't matter, right? If someone betrayed you, it's okay. You can have a dance. So even all the bad things that people's so-called bad things that people do, they're all, you know, part of their act in the drama, right? And so, can you alter the drama to your convenience? I don't think so. It is what it is. And all the people are playing the parts that they play. So what we have to do is navigate our way through. If you have good navigation skills, if you have good powers, interpersonal powers, the power, for example, sometimes Baba talks about people who are living in the family, one of them is a BK, one of them is not, and he calls it storks and swans living together. And of course he says storks and swans can't live together, but they do live together. And so you have to manage it, you see? And so once we have accomplished this, then the work will be done. So therefore, this is what we have to do. So he puts us with specially designed people with whom we do not harmonize, right? And he says, okay, you harmonize with this one, and you harmonize with all of these. You see, now if you're a Madhuban Nivasi, you have to harmonize with about 3,000 people. So that's quite a bit of harmonizing. Many people live in a center with just, you know, a total of 30, including the people in the center, the people who come regularly, the people who come irregularly, harmonize with all of them, harmonize with the non-BKs, harmonize with your body which is not giving you cooperation. Anybody got any sickness? You see, we have to harmonize with that. So there's harmonizing of our different natures, harmonizing of our souls with physical nature, which is our body. And of course, if absolute harmony is the thing which opens the gates to mukti and jivan mukti, that means it's the highest possible stage of yoga. You see? Because after that, that's it. Doors to mukti are open, and we go through, and everybody else goes through. And so it's about resonance. Take Srimat. Everybody knows Srimat, of course, number-wise and differently. But if we follow Srimat, that will also cause us to come into greater harmony. Following Srimat involves renouncing Manmat and Paramat. You see. In the Gita, it does talk about renouncing your mind and your intellect. Baba also talks about us giving up our mind, intellect, and sanskaras. So we have to sacrifice all these things into the yajna, so that they can be purified. And then when we donate our mind, intellect, and sanskaras, what happens to us is Baba will give us new and better ones. You see. So is there anything about that deal that we don't like? Do we want to keep our old Tamil Pradhan unmanageable, you know, mind, which is all over the place? Do we want to keep our intellect that is full of distractions and lack of ability to concentrate and all kinds of other gyan aside from Srimat? And we've got all kinds of Iron Age sanskaras, because we have some Golden Age sanskaras somewhere in there, but they're kind of hidden deep down. So there is a process of transfer and changing over from the Iron Age stage to the Golden Age stage. And during the confluence age, the subtle pradhan potential that we have within us and the tamo pradhan actuality that we know so well about ourselves and each other clashes. And occasionally it has been said that the yajna is a stone grinding machine. You know, stone grinding machine, what they do is they put lots of jagged stones into it and it whirls them all around and they kind of smooth each other out. Sometimes it is compared with a mountain torrent. As the snow melts, the water comes down very fast and there's a lot of boulders in there, and as they get knocked against each other, as the water passes around them and pushes them around, then out of that they bring out the Shivalingam stones, because they're perfectly formed ovals, I see. And so this is a very good analogy for what happens to us in the confluence age to actually bring us to this beautiful oval form with no rough edges, no jagged edges. And as you know, we are all diamonds, and it takes a diamond to cut a diamond, because diamond cutting, you know, diamonds are very hard. So if you see somebody whose sanskaras are absolutely unchangeable, that's a diamond, a rough diamond. And you, rough diamond, sit with that rough diamond, and eventually you get the perfect diamond that Baba talks about, for which you have to be a hero, because you have to be heroic to do this. Is that right? And so if you can think of anything in the confluence age that you would use the word difficult for, difficult, that means it's right. If this was easy, anybody could do it. If it's difficult and we do it, there's a lot of merit in that. And if we are alone to do something difficult, maybe we might not be able to do it. But then Baba gives us a promise, and he says, I am always with you. Keep aware of me being always with you. All of this cacophony or disharmony that exists in the as the effect of Iron Age sanskaras or clashes of egos impacting each other, all of this exists because of not being with Baba. So the absence of Baba creates dissonance. The presence of Baba, if you make yourself very aware that Baba's with you, trust it, then it introduces a very powerful harmonizing element. Because Baba is such an energy with such a resonance that he's sometimes compared with this philosopher's stone, you know, the paras. So one of the words that's given to Shiv Baba is parasnat. Generally we find in our translations it's translated as Lord of Divinity, but it's more detailed than this. It is Lord of Divinity, but in what way? The philosopher's stone, which is also the word for paras, is that intellect that can transform base metal into gold. So it's the the alchemist. Yeah. So we are alchemy students, right? And the base metal is right here, the gold is right here. So we're doing an alchemical process on ourselves, which is predicated on the presence of Baba, the philosopher's stone or the alchemical stone. So that means Shiv Baba's self, when close to us, causes us to change from iron to gold. And this closeness of us to Baba is called yoga. Now see. So as much as we are in yoga with Baba, that much, as you know from the powers, the picture of the powers, you see that in your mind's eye, and you have all the different images in the different lotus petals on that picture, And in the middle of that picture, you see a yogi who is sitting there in a lotus position and who has got a line of light going up to Shiv Baba. And the picture is called Powers Through Yoga. That means we do not get these powers any other way than through yoga. So that means that when we have yoga with Baba, the powers get activated. And the more we are experienced in yoga, the more our powers get activated. Baba gives us the powers as soon as we get born. It's our birthday gift. He gives us 8 powers, which are instruments, which are abilities, but we have to activate them. And you activate them by having yoga with Baba and also by thinking about what they are, you see. And as you know, this entire gyan that we have is really very simple. One dot is me, one dot is Baba, and then everything is round and round and up and down. The drama goes around and round, and we go up and down between being on the earth and up in the soul world. So that's the gyan. And it's a perpetual motion. I, the soul, God, the supreme soul, and everything is going round and round and up and down. Then come the details or the complications. You see. And right now, we are in the confluence age, but very often, we slip into the Iron Age because we're only really in the confluence age when we are in soul consciousness. Is that right? So the confluence age is not a chronological time period, although we do say 1936 to 2011 makes 75 years, and so we are celebrating the 75th Diwali. So from that perspective, yes, it has been that amount of time since Shiv Baba has been telling us to be soul conscious. But how much time have we actually been soul conscious? That may be very difficult to calculate. Sometimes Baba asks us to keep our chart, and in the process of keeping our chart, to determine how much time are you soul conscious? How much time are you in Baba's remembrance? And depending what standards you happen to use for that, so you will give yourself a percentage. You know. So if you say, I am absolutely, totally connected with Baba, the current is running through, and I'm completely bodiless, that may be once a month. For a second. Is that right? I think, or maybe once every 6 months. You know. Russian translation. Anyway, I'll keep on talking and you keep on trying to get your translation. So then you could say, no, that's not going to satisfy me, that kind of advancement. I will take 100,000 kalpas to get anywhere, and that won't work. So we have to try and find a standard that is acceptable to ourselves. I see. And so we variously try different standards, and I won't go through all of those. You do your own checking. And as you go further, you listen to the Murli every day, right? Sometimes you listen to it, you read it also, you read it several times, you churn it also, and you get all sorts of insights and moments of enlightenment, you know. But that is not every day. It's every once in a while that you really work with the Murli to that extent. But at least you listen to the Murli every day. And as you listen to the murli, sometimes you're paying attention, sometimes you're not paying attention. And one day in a murli, Baba had suggested to us the best way to listen to the murli is that as you hear the point, to experience that point for that duration of time, and then the next point you experience that point for that duration of time. So for example, he starts with Om Shanti, then for 1 second you become a peaceful soul. Then he says Mite Mite Bache, that means sweet, sweet children, and then for that second you become sweet, sweet children. And then he says Bhap Samjate Hai, which means the father is explaining. So you go into that consciousness that the father, as the teacher, is explaining to me the soul. So you keep being what it is that he says, and you are with him as he goes along with the murli, right? And you let go the point as soon as it's gone so that you can be present with the next point, you see? And just experience each point as it comes along is a very, very nice experience of the murli, and you can also keep it with you because you allowed yourself second by second, point by point, to shift with what Baba is saying, you see? And you didn't have any other thoughts. You just experienced that point, then you experienced the next point, then you experienced the next point. This will make you very concentrated, and it also will give you good experience of being in the present moment. You see, because to be soul conscious and to be with Baba is very, very helpful to be in the present moment. And then when we are in an interaction with another soul with whom we may or may not be in harmony, you see, every time a soul performs an action, it has a particular duration. So for example, someone annoys you. So there's a point where they begin to annoy you, and then they continue annoying you for some amount of time, and then that performance is finished because some other thing starts off. And then there's a particular period of time when you're getting annoyed by that soul. And during the period of time that you're getting annoyed by that soul, you're body conscious. Because there is a magnetic pull on you of the annoyance factor of the other person. Right? And so, you are trying to deal with it. And some waste thoughts may be provoked by this annoying situation. A person, say, may be annoying you for 30 minutes. So for 30 minutes, there's an energy that's pulling you towards itself, and that's provoking waste thoughts. And you are attempting to resist those waste thoughts using different powers, you see. So the first thing will be that you say, here's this annoying soul again, and they're starting to annoy me, but I'm not going to get annoyed, right? So I'm going to be really peaceful, you know. And then so they become a little bit more annoying because they're not succeeding in annoying you, so they upgrade the volume and maybe be a little more annoying in a few different ways, you see. So you have to start really using your power of accommodation, tolerance, withdrawal, you know. And one very good thing that is one of the yuktis that we can use is maybe this annoying drama of this annoying person goes on for 30 minutes, within which there are 30 times 60 seconds, which is quite a lot, 900 seconds in 30 minutes, am I right? Yeah. So you have to do 900 times a decision to be detached, to accommodate, to love them, to give them full permission from the depth of your heart to perform their part exactly how they would like to do it, and that you will be detached, loving, tolerant, merciful, etc., for as long as this type of annoying thing goes on, you see. That's major accomplishment, you see. For 900, second by second, for 900 seconds. I mean, you might be able to hold it for about 4 or 5 seconds a few times, you know. But it's up there, at least 500 firm, determined thoughts have to be put forth, you see. And then you can evaluate yourself at the end that, you know, how well you did, or how you, you know, it got to you sometimes, or you could keep it up for maybe 25 minutes, but the last 5 minutes it was just out of your range. But you still have to give yourself credit for those 25 minutes that I managed it, you know. And all of this is use of powers. So whether the person's annoying or not doesn't really matter. The annoying behavior was specially so that you could actually develop and become skilled in the use of those powers. And a special, of special importance is the power of discrimination. Because you have to discriminate which power to use. And how long and at what level, you know. And if it becomes a little too much, replace it with another power. Which one? You see. And what positioning you can have towards this situation, or do you remove yourself from this scene in drama? So a lot of deciding has to happen, but the fundamental aim is that I, the soul, because God has said so, I do have within me somewhere such a state of gold that is so malleable that I can actually live with anyone of any sanskaras, and I can endure any type of situation indefinitely, you see. That is called invincible, you see. That's the highest level of power imaginable. And in this world, people do want to have power. They like power. They like money, wealth. They like health. They like to be respected and regarded and loved and so on. Because when you receive these things from other people, it gives you the illusion that you're okay. Except that after some time you realize that it's not real, it's just an illusion. Because I'm taking support of other people. And any time that support may be withheld, or it can be turned into its opposite, it can become an attack, and so on and so forth. And so Baba teaches us that one way for us to be able to be in harmony with all other people is to be completely independent of the others. That means my inner harmony is the most reliable kind of harmony that will produce a resonance that will get others to resonate with me. And then if I'm in a really good harmony with Shiv Baba, that means the current is passing. Sometimes Dadi talks about the current, and she distinguishes it from Sakash. So that this is practice for tonight. It's not a traffic control. We can keep going. We have to harmonize with that. But you can still hear me all right. So another important part which you can use this is to include it, you know. I mean, I remember when I first came in Gyan, I thought that everything out there should harmonize with me. So if I want to be peaceful and quiet, then the external should suit that, you see. And I remember one time I was in a center in Delhi, and we were having a yoga bhati, and they put music on, which was at enormously high decibels. And I thought, you know, now, don't they know that really loud music doesn't seem to correspond to being a peaceful soul? And that it'd be better if they would bring down the decibels to something that's, you know, not going to probably destroy my eardrums, you know. And how strange it is that they think that we got to have a really loud noise to encourage quietness. I thought, this is outside my range of comprehension. But as time went by, we found that, or I found that, you are getting opportunities of this nature to be able to accommodate, you know. Or large amount of flashing lights while you're trying to concentrate on a single one. So this is counterproductive. But eventually you find, no, it's not. It's very good for us to practice our practice in circumstances of adversity. Because life in the confluence age is always done in conditions of adversity. Have you noticed that? And this is because this helps us to intensify our skill in the power of accommodation. We can accommodate any amount of noise. Destruction is probably pretty noisy. And we have to be absolutely in peace during destruction. So if we practice with a fair amount of noise, then we're ahead. You see, because we can accommodate all that noise. We can accommodate all kinds of different smells, you know, good ones, bad ones, strong ones, nasty ones, any kind of smell. We can accommodate any kind of visual distraction. We can accommodate, you practiced handling heat in Shantivan, right? Then by the time it gets to December, you can practice handling the cold. Or there is water, there isn't water. Or there's food you like, there's other kind of food that you'd rather not have, but that's what it is. So we really have many, many situations which help us to manage the power of accommodation. Because when we dislike someone, or when we dislike something, or when we dislike some circumstance, then we are putting ourselves in dissonance with what's going on. And we believe that we can have harmony when that thing is not there. You see? And then we use energy to remove the offending item. You see? Take, for example, sound. I did an experiment because before I came into Gyan, long, long, many, many years ago, when I was about like 14 or something, I thought, I want to have the experience of total silence. And so I would go to more and more distant and remote places in order to find total silence. And you can eliminate one sound and another sound and another sound, and there's always something going on underneath something, underneath something. Finally, I did find a really remote part of the Sahara Desert where it was absolutely quiet. And then I said to myself, ooh, this is not practical. I'm looking for inner silence. So, you know, the light goes on and you realize that the external things, notwithstanding, our practice is about something internal. So when we want to have harmony as a soul through the body, with other souls through the body, through different circumstances, etc., it's not really about what is occurring in the drama. So it's about, I must have good skill in all the powers. That means I must have a good accumulation of yoga to be able to make all these powers work. And I must have full acceptance of all the people, that they are absolutely all right the way they are. Means a complete renunciation of the intention, thought, preference to change someone. And I remember learning a very good little phrase which came from the AA people, Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, you can't stop it, you can't control it, you can't change it. I said, is that not the truth? Yeah. Whatever someone is doing to annoy you, doesn't matter what you do to stop it, they will do it anyway. You cannot control it. You know, how many control freaks do you know? We have quite a few amongst us. You see? Trying to control things, trying to make things the way they want them to be. Because if you make it the way I want it to be, it'll be better, it'll be right, but it won't be harmonious. I see. So, Control Freaks Anonymous, you can't stop it, you can't change it, you can't control it. So that means we have to sort of go against our old nature. Say your old nature is to be a control freak, which many of us are. You know, perfectionist is another word for it. Oh, but Baba likes perfection. Well, perfection is a needle standing upright on the edge of a thin glass while it's moving. Can you do that? There is a way. You have to stick the needle into a cork and stick forks around the cork, and so that it's got things, you know, to balance it. Balance means you have to have long sticks. So your eight powers, you can actually look at them as these long sticks that enable you to balance or stay balanced under any circumstances of disruption, disbalance, movement, upheaval, and you stay steady, focused, and I'm a pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful soul, and Baba is with me. He could be this side, or this side, or he could be in front, or he could be behind, or he could have his hand on your head, however you want it, but make yourself really aware of his presence, and then take a step of courage, which is to accept the situation as it is. That's a hugely courageous step. Accept the person as they are and use the circumstances, the period of time of that potentially difficult situation, to increase your skill in the use of the powers. Sometimes you have to use all the powers all at once, you know. And sometimes you use two or three powers. Do you remember when Baba said last March that the destruction began with the Japanese earthquake? Now, why did he say that? So we all started thinking, why did he say, what's special about it? Okay, it was a 9-point earthquake. It created earthquake, it created tsunami, and it created radiation leak. So I think it was maybe the first triple disaster. Because previously we had maybe just single or double disasters, but triple disaster. And as he said that in the end, we will have to take the exam of all the five elements attacking us simultaneously. Air, earth, water, fire, and ether. And all the five vices, greed, anger, lust, attachment, and ego, plus evil spirits on top of that. You see, so we need to be very, very steady in that. And in order for us to be able to manage these things, the work of harmonizing ourselves with all the circumstances of drama that arise as we navigate our way through the confluence age and all the different players, the different family members. This is the great gift that each one provides us, is enables us to become egoless. Is anybody going to destroy their own ego? I don't think so. Leave it to other people. Much better. You know, they will stop at nothing to destroy your ego. Is that right? And so if somebody else will do it for you, is that not advantageous? It's very difficult to destroy your own ego. You can't even see it. Of course, the other people can see it only too well, and they'll be very happy to oblige. So if somebody's attacking your ego, you have to immediately use the power of discrimination to discern it. Oh, this person is attacking my ego, and so let me tolerate it. Let me accommodate it, because we want our ego to be destroyed, but we don't like how painful it is. So we have to accommodate and tolerate the pain of it while it's getting done. It's like an anesthetic while the surgeon removes some unwanted item from the body. Is that right? So whenever you experience someone's attacking your ego, and usually what Baba says, that you feel that somebody's behaving in an insulting way. You see. So anytime you feel even slightly insulted, immediately put up a red flag, or a green flag maybe, you know. But just notice, my ego is being attacked, is being chipped away, and the sign of it is I'm feeling insulted, so I have to accommodate and tolerate that feeling and make it go away, and find in myself a place of perfect neutrality. I had a very nice experience a few days ago of just this. It was quite intriguing. Someone was what you say in English, chewing me out. You know this expression? They just going at you. And which I hadn't done anything that I thought would merit that, but that person wanted me to do something a different way than what I was doing. So I was just observing myself, and there was another person standing next to me observing me getting chewed out, and the person who was chewing me out was also observing how I would deal with getting chewed out. And so it was quite an interesting kind of experimental circumstance. And I found myself sort of going into a place of being completely neutral for the duration, which may have been, say, 10 minutes, I see. And just being very, very neutral, very, very haji, okay, whatever you want, that's perfectly all right. And not at all being suppressed by it, or any emotion, or any kind of thing, you see. And then when it was over, like nothing happened. It was very intriguing, you see. And I noticed the person who was doing it and the person who was watching it made some kind of body language communication that, oh, that was good. So I thought, pass. You know. And my relationship with those two people went up a notch in terms of harmony. You know. And I think in this process of getting harmonious, we have to experiment on ourselves, and we have to observe ourselves in all kinds of different relationships with different kinds of people, and so that we can see when we fail, how we fail, how painful it is when we fail, how embarrassed we feel when we fail, because we know that technically we could have passed, and we didn't look good. Everyone likes to look good. And so every so often, you know, of course most of the time you fail, right? But every so often you do pass. And when you do, it's memorable. Because then you know it can be done. It can be replicated. And you also know that when you do pass, you don't lose anything. You gain something. So, that means tolerance, accommodation. You're not attached to, it doesn't have to be my way, I don't mind, you know. So then you can start really thinking about how it, what it means to be detached and loving, you see. Because if someone's annoying you, you can't love them. Someone's chewing you out and you don't want to be chewed out, then you don't love them at that time and you're not detached, you're affected, you see. But if you can be unaffected, you can be detached, you can be loving, you're with Baba as a detached observer of that scene for X number of minutes, and then when it's over, you're intact as a human being, emotionally smooth. Your intellect hasn't gone anywhere except it's just that, oh yeah, you did that nicely, very good, keep going. No waste thoughts. Nice relationship with all the people concerned, nothing to repair, nothing got broken. You know? And so you say, yeah, this is the way. You know, this is the way, because it really doesn't matter about people's behavior. Whether somebody's right or wrong doesn't really matter. What matters is, can I hold my stage through this moment of the drama? Because I get my grades from Baba for that, you see. You've heard me from time to time talk about how I don't really think there's much purpose in espousing conventional morality, because conventional morality says if somebody does something wrong, then you should let them know and you should stop them, control them, change them, punish them, fight them, you know, confront them. And Srimad says, no, don't do that. That is not going to do any good. All it will do is escalate the karmic account. And it's the presence of a karmic account of some type that creates an environment of dissonance, or that brings you together with that person so that the karma can be settled through suffering. So if somebody annoys you, you will annoy them back. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, you know? This is one kind of law. But Baba says, no. We are in the time of settlement. We have to settle all our karmic accounts. And so all these things that come up as moments of disharmony, we can say, okay, there's some karmic account going on here. And Baba says the best way to settle an account is through yoga. And then we say, what does he mean by that? How does that work? Perhaps one way to interpret it is, if I can hold my stage in my inner harmony, stay in tune with myself and with Baba, and having the application of the knowledge and the powers going on through that event, it settles the karma. The thing that wanted the karma to get made worse, and because if somebody comes to settle some karma, you'll give as good as you get, plus some more, so in fact it escalates it, doesn't settle it at all. Om Shanti. There's one other little aphorism that I'd like to go into a little bit, and that is the thing that Baba has told us, do not give sorrow, do not take sorrow. And in conventional morality it says, do not give sorrow, but you can take sorrow. But Baba says, no, that's not going to work. Do not give sorrow, do not take sorrow. So, if somebody is annoying you, it doesn't mean that you have to get annoyed. Because if you get annoyed, that means you're taking sorrow. I see. If someone's insulting you, it doesn't mean you have to get insulted. If you get insulted, it means you're taking sorrow. If someone's spreading lies about you, if you take it personally and you get upset by it, it means you're taking sorrow. I see. And so it's a very, very important skill to develop this ability to not take sorrow. So there's one expression that is very useful, and that is, do not take it personally. And people do take things personally, but it's really not Srimat. Do not take things personally. Do not take sorrow. When you have a waste thought, you're giving yourself sorrow. So you have to notice and not take sorrow even from yourself. And with your enlightened intellect, tell your mind, stop that. That is a fruitless thought. You know, I like this word fruitful and fruitless instead of waste and powerful, because I think it's a bit clearer. If something is not going to bear good fruit, why bother to plant those seeds, sorts of seeds? So always plant seeds of thoughts which will bear fruit that you want to eat. So if it's not going to get anywhere, don't do it. So then apply the not and dot. Stop it. I see. So I'm thinking that you may have some questions. So maybe we can take a little bit of time for your questions. Do you have any questions? Yes? Sometimes you do. Anybody? No questions? Please. Yes, I'll repeat the question so everyone can hear it. Sister is saying, how can you distinguish between what I just said, which is an awful lot, and repression? There's repression, suppression, oppression. And as you know, as you also said, if you push something down, it'll come up somewhere else. And this is why perhaps the example of allopathic medicine is good in this, because allopathic medicine, you will suppress a symptom. And then the homeopaths will say, well, as much as you suppress it, that much it'll get worse and it'll go further in and it'll end up as cancer or something. And so it's very good to not suppress or to go to the root, you know. So if someone is hurting your feelings and you're taking it personally, instead of not taking it personally, you will suppress the expression of what you're feeling. Is that right? And so then it'll go in and it'll do damage on the inside. But if you don't suppress it, then it'll do damage on the outside. And so a lot of people think that it's the lesser of two evils to damage yourself on the inside rather than make a huge fuss on the outside. And so they do that. Or someone may oppress you. You can't do this, you can't go there, da 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 da, and you feel, you know, I'm in jail and I can't stand it, you see. So, I mean, when you are using the powers, you're not suppressing, you see. You can't just say, well, I've tolerated and I've tolerated and I've tolerated and I'm not going to tolerate anymore. That means you didn't tolerate at all. You suppressed, but you called it tolerance, you see. So we have to use the right word for the right thing. If we don't use the right word, then we will confuse ourselves. So what we would be more true would be to say, I've suppressed this and I've suppressed this and I've suppressed this and I'm not going to suppress it anymore. Let me explode in your face. And that would be more truthful, you see. But it would not be any less messy, you see. So the thing I think is important is to tell yourself the truth. Something's happening. I can't tolerate it, so I'm going to suppress it because then I'll look good. But we're not here to look good. We're here to be good, to become good. So now, many people, they have inability to manage their emotions. Anybody like that here? Nobody. So you won't suppress anything then. We got one or two. Yeah. You're not going to admit the truth, you know, because if you admit the truth, then you won't look good. And we want to look good because otherwise somebody might see that I'm not a perfect BK. Have you seen a perfect BK? Daddy Prakash Mani? Gone. When you become perfect, you go. So don't get too perfect or you'll go. You know, which is actually what we want to do, right? We're here to become so harmonious that we can all open up the gates of mukti and go. So, emotions. When you have emotions, feelings that are unmanageable, it's an indicator. You've taken sorrow, you've taken something personally, where a power was supposed to have been applied, it wasn't, or it was too weak, you see. And so the result of this is you get an emotion that you can't manage. And so then you take an emotion killer, right? A painkiller. It's an emotion killer. And then your ability to handle that emotion is further reduced. It doesn't work. A short-term solution to an escalating situation. And so what to do? You see, we have to go, I think, back to the drawing board. I am a soul. I am a pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful, blissful soul. And I'm running on empty. I do not have power. Is that right? So I better go get some. And the only place I can get power is Baba. So what I have to do is I have to really study the Murali. I have to really practice meditation. And I have to permit myself to go into all kinds of disturbing situations so that I can become experienced and I can develop my powers. But I must keep up my yoga. Because if I don't, then I will suppress, oppress, repress myself or somebody else, and it will end up in an explosion. Either an implosion or an explosion, or some sort of plosion. And the only solution is do the practice. You see. And so we have to be patient. Because in India it is said that it takes 50 years to become a good yogi. So we're on the way. So give yourself the permission that whatever you do is a rehearsal for the next thing. So if you don't get it quite right, it's okay. You'll improve on it the next time. Because the circumstances that provoke emotions or mistakes or whatever, they will keep coming. The drama is set up like that because Baba has told us we need experience. Because if you're experienced, you can be expert. So we have to do the practice, we have to study the study, and we have to be willing to make mistakes, to be seen to be making mistakes and say, okay, I'll get it right the next time. I'm working on it. That means humility. So the thing that doesn't allow us to do this is again the ego, you see, because the ego says, I want everyone to think that I'm perfect, including myself and including Baba. You see. And Baba says, Why don't you just do what you have to do to become perfect and let it take as long as it takes, you see? Because this is a long road. And every step along the way, there's a lot of things to learn. And it's perfectly okay to be getting there. And if you think, oh, this person has XYZ position and therefore they should be this, that, or the other level of perfection, maybe, maybe not. So don't be disappointed with yourself, don't be disappointed with other people, because we're just playing our roles in the drama. So one thing that I sometimes find is quite good is to consider that everything in the drama is a three-dimensional wallpaper. You're in the middle of your drama, and there's a sphere around you with 3D wallpaper on it, with all these characters doing stuff, but it's actually only wallpaper. So then you can be detached. Because it's only wallpaper. So that's one way, you know. Or if there's a big tiger in the wallpaper, jumping out at you and opening up its teeth, you know, going to get you. It's also only wallpaper, paper tiger. And you just be with Baba. And if you can't handle something, give it to Baba. You see. And if you don't look good, doesn't matter. And if they tell bad things about you, they'll forget them. You know. It doesn't matter. Those things are not important. What's important is keep Baba with me. Do the practice. Study the material because it's good stuff. And it's deep and it's all in code. So you have to churn it in order to be able to extract the essential meaning. And so he tells us what we have to do, but maybe sometimes we don't do it. So maybe we just don't understand. So then we can keep on asking questions until we get clarity and insights and moments of enlightenment. Anybody else have a question? Yes, brother, sister. Sorry, can't see very well. Too far. It's too vague. You've got to be specific. Well, let me just see if I can put this in another language. You were asked to do the minutes of a meeting. Told, asked, requested, whatever it is, the information gets from A to B, you do the minutes. And you do it. Then let go. You can't control it. You can't stop it. You can't change it. If you're told and you're not asked, that means I'm being disrespected. I'm being disrespected means my ego feels insulted. I have an ego problem, which this person has kindly allowed me to feel for a moment, so that I can, you know, allow them to, you know, shave off another little bit of my ego problem. It's all right, you know. So you can use your power of packing up, you know. I think letting go is a really, really useful thing, because then we don't get into karmic accounts with people. You know, if you're so generous as to point out my ego problem to me and make me feel it most unpleasantly, I will, you know, put up my flag and say, okay, now what this is an ego problem. So I need to allow my ego, tolerate the pain, tolerate the indignity, the all of these things, and just take a step of humility. You're actually ahead, you see. Because all these things, whatever we do and so on, it's okay. But the key thing is, I need to be in my harmony, in my resonance, and my ego doesn't allow it. So if somebody's going to chop off my ego, I'm better off. So you discern, use the power to discern, my ego is being hit here and I am actually ahead if I allow that and let it go. And then the incident itself is just instrumental for something much more important, much deeper. You see. And then you discern, accommodate, tolerate, and actually go into profit as well as into harmony. You're ahead. And that is sort of a deeper level of gyan. It's not conventional morality. It's a deeper kind of wisdom. But we do get very reactive due to our allegiance and loyalty to conventional morality. And it deceives us, I feel. This is why I keep knocking it. Yeah. Yes, brother. Well, if you don't want to do the minutes, he says, what if it's not ego? Anyway, it will be ego. It's always ego. But if you tell me something real, it's better. I have a policy for myself not to deal in hypothetical examples because they're unreal, they're not true, and you cannot arrive at any conclusion by dealing with illusions. So tell me something real, it'll be better, more interesting. We'll actually arrive at a conclusion. Anybody have a question? We have another 5 minutes. Yes, brother. When I get upset about the same thing constantly, I want to know the root of the problem. Okay. Yeah, what's blocking you is ego. How to accelerate? You know, ego is so complicated, and it is the thing that's not soul conscious, you see. And so we human souls in this confluence age, our ego is getting attacked from every direction, and it's confusing us because we cannot see it, and we are, generally speaking, identified with it. And again, conventional morality arises out of the ego-based rajo intellect, right? The rajo intellect. It's not a satopradhan intellect. See, a satopradhan intellect says, in Baba's work, somebody tells me to do something, I will make a profit by doing it because my karma is not with that person. My karma is with Baba. See, this is why we have the yagya. The yagya is a physical instrument that enables I, the soul, to make a positive karmic account with Shiv Baba directly. So I do one little baby thing and he gives me 100 million times return. I'm in profit. And the circumstances around it, the person, whatever, doesn't really make any difference because it's an account between myself and Baba. And it doesn't have anything to do with conventional morality or my direct interaction with the person. So I'm told to take the minutes. I can say yes or I can say no. I can walk out. I can jump up on the table and make a big fuss. I can do all sorts of things. And whatever it is I decide to do, I'll be graded for it by Baba. What I want is maximum profit, minimum effort. You see? And if I understand the drama, if I understand the philosophy of karma, and if I have my relationship with Shiv Baba direct, with the people it's then indirect. I see. And the people are specially placed to help me to be egoless, because there's no other way to be egoless other than people are disturbing you. I see. So this is a secret thing which nobody in the rest of the world knows, you see. So the thing, you see, ego covers up a wound in the self-respect, You see? And the wound in the self-respect is so painful, you can't bear it. So you cover it with ego. But the wound in the self-respect needs attention. It's infected. It hurts. So anything that touches this ego covering creates pain in this wound in the self-respect. And so it activates our sensitivity to it, but we can't identify it clearly because we just see myself as being attacked. Actually, you're not. My ego is being touched, which lets me experience the wound, the underlying wound, which is telling me I need attention. So you have to go to the wound. That means you have to be able to tolerate your pain. The root pain is my actual self is wounded. It's empty. It's covered in vices, etc. and so forth. And it doesn't like being that because it's not the reality of me. And this is why Baba has come to us, to just find the real actual self in its really messed up state and sort it out by resonance. You see, the soul consciousness, the God consciousness, is a resonance that repairs this. And the ego stops it. So we have to have these powers, especially the power of tolerance, the tolerance to be able to feel the intense pain in the very bottom of your being that is provoked by this incident. And then just go past the incident, go past the pain, go right to the core, and then hold it up to Baba's light. And that takes a tremendous power, tremendous courage. But if you do it, knowing the setup, the arrangements, you will move yourself through that very quickly. It's a very, very good thing. But it takes courage, takes tolerance. It's like you have to take a big risk and be willing to take a risk, because Baba gives a guarantee that he says, just let me in there and I will make it okay. And just do that. And once you have seen it work once or twice, you start to have faith in it, and then you're willing for that to happen more. And he doesn't do everything all at once because it's too painful. He'll do a little bit at a time, you know. And you take however long it takes, and you get gradually to a point where you're really a world master. Yeah, this is what he's promising us. He's promising us unlimited power. But we need to think about it quite a bit to be able to really see what he's saying to us, so that we can actually take advantage of it as it really is. Very often we just don't see it. So sometimes we just have to stick with it, and it slowly dawns on us what he's really offering us. And our side of it is simply we just have to have enough courage to open up the wound and say, okay, Supreme Surgeon, you do what you have to do. And so this opening up with faith, with courage, is a risk. But it's a very calculated risk. It will hurt, but it will be bearable. And even if it's unbearable, you can still bear it. And what you get out of it is so valuable, so extraordinary, that in hindsight you say, oh, it wasn't a big deal. At the time it feels like a big thing. But, you know, as you go further, it becomes more and more manageable. Yeah? Acha. Om Shanti.